Think Again with Borderlands Cooperative.
Join us for critical conversations about things that matter.
Every Friday at 10 a.m. on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on your dial.
And 3CR Digital, streaming live at 3cr.org.au.
So together, let's think again about important matters affecting us, like economics,
politics,
education,
health,
climate,
and what we can do about it all. Welcome to our 344th episode of Think Again, a program produced by Borderlands Cooperative, an organization working for social change for more than 28 years. I'm Jacques Boulet.
And I'm Jennifer Burrell. We're broadcasting live from the 3CR studio on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. And today we're looking at what is happening in the Australian electorate with some quite big shifts in voting trends and community sentiment, such as a move to One Nation. So we'll unpick some of that.
We're continuing from quite a number of our past Think Again programs when listeners will have heard us critically reflecting on the state of Australian democracy. When we started Think Again in mid-2019, 7 years ago, pre-COVID and just after Scott Morrison's miracle win in the May election of 2019, we had rather ample occasion to wonder where the country was sliding into. You will remember Robodebt, environmental backpedaling, AUKUS, religion with Morrison's evangelical focus, and then, of course, all the COVID policies which ensued.
Yeah, and as you say, Jacques, we started the program just 7 years ago, so it seems like a long time ago now, with quite a few things so politically charged then, now just a whisper of a memory and a lot of other trends
that's
and
right.
events emerging.
At that point in mid-2019, the normality of the two-party regime was still sort of assumed.
Yeah.
Although it was sometimes contested, it was still seen as the relatively solid infrastructure around which political decisions were being framed. About two-thirds of the electorate still seemed to be committed to Labour or the Liberal National Coalition, if not always happily committed. Mm. But they were committed enough to allocate their votes to either the coalition, a conservative right of centre combination, or a not necessarily progressive left of centre Labour Party. The votes of That's right. Not anymore now. The votes of the remaining third of the electorate roughly halved across the more left Greens and an amalgam of more to the right individuals and groups. These right-leaning individuals and groups included what was then still called the Pauline Hanson One Nation Party, FONE. Plus a remaining few political sort of unlocatable independents in terms of party or even position on the left-right continuum kind of way of trying to understand them.
So we didn't really know where those independents were sitting.
That's right.
So what a difference 7 years makes.
They certainly did. Haven't the 2022 and 2025 elections put paid to that quaint picture, which was pretty much based on the assumed two-party system. Of course, in Think Again, we have continually argued against some of the encrusted and arguably fairly undemocratic structures and processes inherent in that system. Mm-hmm. In addition to the two-party arrangement, we have been critical of the centrist illusions and pretensions of Australian politics, leading to a great inertia across much of our political decision-making at the national and international levels.
So inertia or backsliding around issues like decision-making around climate change and environmental protection and doing something about inequality. Yeah,
particularly the latter as well, yes. We have also been critical of some of the remnants, the leftovers of colonial and imperial impositions, including royal commissions as an institution and other monarchic leftovers, of the unwavering commitment to our Anglo-Saxon and Western allegiances and their remaining traces in our international political stances.
Yeah, like AUKUS and binding ourselves to US military objectives.
Absolutely, and also Australia's commitment to the so-called Five Eyes spying system.
Yeah, the Five Eyes being the intelligence alliance made up of Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the UK and the US.
That's right.
All Anglosphere countries.
That's correct. Our historical Western allegiance is also played out in our faithful followership of US deeds and misdeeds. And nationally, it played out as well in the latent but clearly remaining whiteness and racism in our dealings with First Nations peoples, immigration, refugees, and asylum seekers.
Yeah, so the, as you say, traces of our historical Western allegiances.
Absolutely.
And then we have our still strong commitments to neoliberal social policies and to profound inequality. The idea that we should leave almost everything to the market, including supports for older people and people with disabilities. And we know how that is going.
We certainly do. And again, as I started out saying, the overall structure of the quaint but often rather repulsive picture has changed dramatically since 2019, or so it seems. In the 2022 election, there was a first kind of a shock when almost a dozen so-called teals leached from the coalition, mostly from the Liberal Party, into a more centre-left direction, especially in protest against the environmental non-policies of the Liberals.
Yeah, while maintaining being economically conservative.
Exactly. Yeah. And on the right, there seemed to be some leeching to One Nation, while Labour had the preferential votes of the Greens and achieved a rather safe majority. In 22, that was. Yeah. Then in 2025, with a consolidated Labour majority, losses to the Greens, for the Greens, the Teals seemingly holding on, and the coalition, however, further lurching towards the right, into the arms of One Nation, or should that be into its dark underbelly?
Yeah, I think the latter.
For sure, the turmoil in the coalition has contributed to that drift and the massive loss of parliamentary seats for the Liberals and the Nationals.
Yeah, but last Monday's news was a bit of a shock. That was with One Nation emerging as the strongest primary vote recipient, according to a Redbridge poll, for the first time. That's the first time that's happened. So we have a fringe racist, far-right party having the strongest primary vote, according to this poll. So what the hell's going on?
Well, there was a very insightful article in Pearls and Irritations by Kossamaras that can help us with that. The article is titled Three Australias. New polling shows our deepening divide. And that article was reprinted in the New Daily as well. And Kossamaras is well placed to write about this because he is the director of the political consultancy firm Redbridge Group and a former Labour Party strategist. According to Samaras, there is no longer a contest between two parties in our voting patterns, but there are three structurally distinct demographic and voting blocs: Labour, One Nation and the Coalition.
Yeah, so to go to the first block, the Labour voting block is described as educated, urban, diverse and renting. So to quote Kossamaras, the Labour's coalition is now overwhelmingly an inner and middle ring metropolitan formation. It is university educated. It rents or has only recently bought, and is overwhelmingly under the age of 45. It is heavily first and second generation migrant. It is anchored in the public sector and care economy. It is dominant among Gen Z and millennial voters, and it skews female by a clear margin. Unquote. And Samara says that Labor has become the natural home of educated youth for the first time, while losing outer suburban and regional working class voters who built the party.
Interesting. Secondly, he says, we have the One Nation voting bloc. And he describes it as older, outer suburban, mortgage and male.
Mm-hmm.
And he Samaras explains, the current crop of One Nation voters are different from the initial protest voters of the late 1990s. They are predominantly the outer suburban, working class of the growth corridors, the constituency that past Liberal Prime Minister John Howard wooed in the late 1990s. We will remember that. They are financially struggling and they are anti-elite in sentiment rather than anti-elite in their ideologies. But now the post-Howard coalition, instead of appealing to this bloc, they try to appeal to the asset-rich instead and assumes that the outer suburb aspiration class will follow.
Which it doesn't, of course.
Of course not.
Yeah, so Cos Samaras' third voting bloc is the coalition bloc, and it's described as wealthy, older, Anglo, and owners. To quote from Samaras again, this is the bloc in decline. The coalition's remaining voters are concentrated in high socioeconomic status in established suburbs. They are university-educated professionals in finance, law, and corporate management. They are outright homeowners and self-funded retirees. They are the investor class. They are Anglo-Australian and predominantly over 55. And critically, they are dominant in no large demographic.
Mm.
In other words, they're a small demographic, I think he means.
Mm-hmm.
To carry on with his quote, the coalition has lost the asset poor without holding the asset rich. Its remaining voters are not a coalition. They are our residue.
That's quite a dramatic kind of way of describing it, really. And importantly, Samaras concludes that the changing voting patterns are not just short-term reactions to events, but they are a rebellion against the inequality that has been growing over the last few decades of neoliberalism, which has been preceded by a time of greater equality from post-World War II, 1945, to about 1975, for about 30, 35 years.
Yeah, so the voters are rebelling, but not in the way many on the left would have predicted.
Indeed, indeed. To finally quote Samaras, the story of the past 40 years is at its core a story of reversal. The Hawke-Keating reforms, the Thatcher-Reagan turn across the Anglosphere, the integration of capital markets, the deregulation of finance, the marginalization of organized labor, these were not isolated decisions. They were a system. And the system worked in the sense that it produced exactly the outcome it was designed to produce. The gradual restoration of pre-war patterns of wealth and power, therefore neoliberalism.
Yeah, unquote.
That's right.
Meaning grossly unequal patterns. So the restoration of grossly unequal patterns. Well, the issue is clearly inequity, and people do know that the system's not a level playing field and it's not working for them.
That's correct. And let's listen to a little bit of appropriate music, Positive Change by Buruk.
Do you think so?
You're listening to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio on 855 AM on your dial and streaming live at 3cr.org.au. Before the break, we were talking about the rather profound transformations taking place in the Australian political infrastructure, including the virtual collapse of the two-party system and the rise of One Nation. In response to this situation, Kim Carr, who is a former Labour senator, believes that governments need to restore people's confidence in democratic institutions that can deliver economic security, fairness, and national purpose.
Mm-hmm. So, economic security, fairness, and national purpose, that seems reasonable.
Sort of, yeah. Depends what you mean with it, particularly with the national purpose one. And in an article, Kim Carr, also appearing in Pearls and Irritations, and he titled it "Alarming One Nation Numbers Are an Early Warning Signal and Not a Crystal Ball." Kim Carr suggested that, and I'm quoting him, "The warning is not that One Nation is destined to govern, nor that current seat projections will materialize unchanged. The warning is that the political foundations of the two-party system are eroding more rapidly than many in Canberra appear willing to acknowledge." And now the hammer. "Unless governments can restore confidence that democratic institutions are capable of delivering economic security, fairness, and national purpose, fragmentation will deepen and populist movements will continue to grow," end of quote.
A trend we've seen worldwide.
And for Labour, Carr suggests that to survive electorally, Labour cannot rely for much longer on preference flows. And the fact that its two-party opposition partner is now totally fragmented and looking for people who want to run and vote for them. As well, Carr warns against the continuation of the cautious incrementalism, which may save Labour for the next election around, but, he says, it is unlikely to rebuild durable political loyalty in communities experiencing declining living standards and diminishing economic security, end of quote.
Yeah.
Carr concludes with a strong call to rebuild a democratic economy that could be and would be capable to restore confidence in the capacity of government and in labour to provide security, opportunity and dignity.
He's actually talking about substance.
That's right.
And I like how you described the coalition as Labour's two-party opposition partner, because they do often operate as partners, or they have, to preserve the two-party system.
Mm-hmm.
And this was really well illustrated in the deal that the major parties did on electoral funding reform, inverted commas, just before the last election. These so-called reforms start next year, and they're pretty transparently designed to reduce funding for new candidates and smaller parties in favour of the larger established ones.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So I'm quoting independent Kate Cheney from an article by Karen Barlow in the Saturday paper in late June. So independent Kate Cheney said, "So an individual candidate can spend $800,000 on a campaign. A party can spend $90 million. It is not a level playing field. Obviously, I and others have an incumbency advantage that new people don't. But competition is so important in politics, just like it is in business. There needs to be a marketplace for new ideas to come to the fore, and the major parties are doing their best to prevent that competition," unquote.
That's right. Competition which is for the centre rather than for quite different philosophies or policies.
Mm.
And the market language aside, we have to agree that there has to be spaces where new ideas and more democratic ways of organising ourselves can come to the fore.
Yeah. Yes. And incidentally, That article was looking at what past Liberal PM Malcolm Turnbull calls the shrinking demise of the Liberal Party. Apparently, Malcolm Turnbull's in the background on the Conservative side, agitating for a new centre-right party, and some of the Teal independents look like they were considering joining one or making some noises in that direction. A big impetus is the changes that will happen in electoral funding that will disadvantage independents, as I said. But also many of the more socially progressive Libs, while they're always economically conservative, but some of the more socially progressive Libs have lamented that the party has been getting rid of good progressive candidates since PM Howard in the 1990s. And that's when the more progressive Libs, socially progressive Libs, used to be called wets. And the people like John Howard would have been called a dry.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all dries now, really, because they've got rid of all the wets, mostly, except for a few. Well, the regressive dries have won, basically, and the Libs are now crying into their milk at the consequences, as expressed in the Saturday paper article. To quote from that article, pincered by One Nation, Labour and the Independents, the Liberals are becoming sharper in their criticism of the Teals. So, actually, you could say the Libs are bleeding to One Nation on their right flank and bleeding to the Teals on their more socially and ecologically progressive side. And with Labour's shift to the right, they're obviously conservative voters who would never have voted for Labour in the past, but who would feel more comfortable voting for them now, as Labour has worked quite hard not to scare the horses too much.
Right? Haven't they ever?
Yeah, but I think that they've made some attempts in the right direction recently, though by far not enough. And the they've made some attempts at really addressing the unfair system favouring wealth and big polluters. I'll just start that again. The unfair system favouring wealth and the big polluters substantially remains, but they did roll back plans that would have left our tax system a lot more regressive a couple of years ago with the Stage 3 tax changes.
Mm-hmm.
And they're currently making a start to roll back handouts to people with assets and property through changes to negative gearing and the capital gains tax. Albeit a small start, but they are having quite a furious splashback nevertheless.
And hopefully Labour keep their nerve.
That's right. And independent MP Zali Steggall, in the Saturday paper article I talked about before, she worries about the lack of options for people to vote for, which is a central point, which is driving people to One Nation.
Mm-hmm.
She says people lack options when they don't think the system is working in their favour. And she said that there's a lot of people around Australia looking at Parliament asking, who speaks for me? Which broadly fits in with Samaras's analysis of voting blocks and trends that we were talking about.
That's right, it does, yep.
And Steggall worries about the rhetoric of One Nation and how it influences the coalition and our communities, which is a really important point, and which prompted me when I read that article to jot down something on my copy of the Saturday paper that I'd been thinking of for a while. And this is what I wrote. How ironic that politicians whose rhetoric and policies are the meanest and nastiest are the same ones who worry about migrants entering this country having the right values.
Mm-hmm.
I always wonder, what values are you talking about? Yours? No way. unquote from myself. And then Jacques sent me a great article by Amy Remikus in the New Daily, written in April, delving into this very theme. And the article's titled, Ham-Fisted Embrace of Australian Values Exposes a Craven Hollowness.
Mm-hmm.
She starts with this. Quote, Angus Taylor's latest attempt to grasp any sort of relevance has laid bare the raw politics at the heart of Australia's conservative movement. But it also raises an interesting question. What exactly are the Australian values he thinks migrants are not upholding?
That's right.
Those who migrate from liberal democracies have a greater likelihood of subscribing to Australian values, he claims, which immediately rules out the US and Britain, both of which, according to the latest VDEMS report, no longer make the grade as liberal democracy and have been downgraded to electoral democracy. That's mostly because of crackdowns on freedom of expression and civil liberties.
Mm-hmm.
An authoritarian push led by those claiming to uphold the values of their particular nation, which apparently means limiting the civil rights of those protesting against a genocide and the trampling of due process by democratically elected governments, unquote, which all of which we've seen here, of course.
That's right.
And which we've had several programs about. But, well, I think we'll have to leave it there as time is running out. But we'll put a link on our program page to that and other articles, and we'll certainly come back to it.
And while we see them compete for an empty centre, empty in terms of the values, let's say till next time and stay informed and alert.
And stay tuned to 3CR.
That's right.
3CR. Celebrating 50 years.
For the month of June, we're asking listeners to donate to the station to help keep us going. We rely on the generous donations of the community to survive. Go to 3cr.org.au and show your support for community-owned and community-run media.
So make sure you tune in next week for our special fundraiser program, and please ring in. We'd love to hear from you and we'd love to receive your support.
Your support as a listener and money if you have any.
That's right. For today, thanks for tuning in to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio. If you would like to send any comments, please email Borderlands at info@borderlandscooperative.net. Our past programs are available by podcast on a variety of platforms and via the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au. Meanwhile, to finish our program today, please enjoy Milk and Mana by King Stingray.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.